You're listening to Raising the Bets, a podcast of Pirates and Penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston, sharing the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, our adventures near and far, exploring the culture, and experiencing it too. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
So welcome back. This is our second episode, and I want to welcome new listeners who've listened to the first episode and may have seen a notice that we sent out an email from SQPN or postings on Facebook or anywhere else that you may have seen it, or a recommendation from a friend, which would be awesome to know that some people are recommending the show to others. And so we want to welcome you. You're on the ground floor of this new podcast, and so we're very happy to have you with us. You know, we should mention the subtitle of this podcast, a podcast of Pirates and Penguins.
Yes, Pirates and Penguins.
Yeah, it's a pirate. So it comes out of something related to the kids. They're all kind of crazy about penguins.
Right. It started when Isabella, our oldest, was five, and we read Mr. Popper's Penguins, and then we went on to, she got fascinated with Antarctica and penguins, and we read dozens of books about penguins, and then eventually she got a stuffed penguin, and then Sophia, her younger sister, had to have one too, because she had to have, at that point, she had to have everything that Isabella had, and then the boys needed penguins, and then Lucia needed a penguin, and so now they all have stuffed penguins. And the penguins are the center of this elaborate fantasy game. Sophia's penguins seem to be the lead players, Waddle and Slidey. And they have a spaceship called the Martian, which also travels in time. It's very much a Doctor Who sort of thing. They go back in time. They like to dig up dinosaurs and then befriend dinosaurs and then use the dinosaurs to go chase down Nazis. They also visit all the planets, and they've gone to the sun, and
we'll share some of the stories. they write these stories down. They're called Waddle Shorts. I'm not sure why, but where they picked that little bit of language up from. But we'll at some point we'll read you some of them. They're very amusing. They're fun for, you know, because they're little kids who come up with these stories. So that's the pirates part.
No, that's the penguins part.
Sorry, that's the penguins part. What's the pirates part?
Well, pirates has been a sort of long-time fantasy. They've made up their own pirates universe. They are the Skeleton Seas pirates with pirate maps and a pirate flag, and they've made up some pirate songs.
Yes, their own pirate songs.
And they've cobbled together pirate costumes.
Yes, yeah, so they are the Pirates and Penguins, plus the whole Swallows and Amazons fascination with kids going to sea and that sort of stuff, which we'll talk about that in the future, about the how Swallows and Amazons has taken over our family travels. I'll explain that at another point. But so that's that kind of explains the title of the podcast. I do want to mention how, for folks who are coming upon this podcast in other ways, other than through SQPN, this podcast is part of the StarQuest production network. We call it StarQuest Media sometimes. And I'm the CEO of this organization, but it's been around for more than a decade. And its mission, it's a nonprofit, and its mission is to explore the intersection of faith and mass culture, pop culture, geek culture. There's different ways of saying it, but we, as a network, we have a whole bunch of shows, and I'm on most of them, but sometimes as the main host, but sometimes as a panelist. And it's a lot of fun. So you go check it out, sqpn.com, and see what we have there. We have some really great shows. But we're part of that network. And one of the reasons we're starting this, and we mentioned this last time a little bit, I think, but we're starting this podcast is we want to also share, you know, some personal parts of us. A lot of those shows are, we're talking about other things people have made or other things. And this is a show where we kind of talk about ourselves. Let's Talk is, which is another show, is kind of like that too. But this is a much more personal show. So we're part of SQPN. It's a nonprofit. It depends on donors to make our way and to frankly pay my salary and keep our family housed and fed. All that is done through SQPN, which that's my full-time job. So let's talk about what's been going on with us, Melanie, over the past week since we talked to folks. And last weekend, as is our wont at this time of year, starting at the beginning of May and going all the way through November, most of the way, almost to Thanksgiving, usually the week before, we on our most Saturdays, we get up early and we travel to the seaside town of Hingham, Massachusetts.
For the farmer's market.
For the farmer's market. It's a couple towns over. Hingham is a very nice town. If I could live in any town in this area, I would move to Hingham. It is a beautiful town, and the people are really nice. And it's one of those towns that still has a downtown where people walk and go into shops, you know? and they have a nice beach. And on the in the parking lot of the beach, not literally on the beach, that would be kind of messy in the sand. But next to the beach in the parking lot every Saturday morning is the Hingham Farmers Market. And we've been going there since we moved here, right?
Right. So about 10 years now?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. We're this is our 10th Farmers Market because we moved in October, November 1st, or I think it was October 31st because I think it was my birthday that we moved, something like that. But it was after the market was done. But so this is our 10th year going. And it's kind of nice because we've gotten to know people there. They recognize us. We recognize them. They've seen our kids grow up. You know, Isabella was, you know, she was three when we first went. I mean, it's nice. I mean, Ben would have been a newborn when we first started going. Right. 2009. Right. Wow. So, wow. His entire life, we've been going to that market. That's kind of amazing to think about. Because we used to go to a market before we moved here in Marblehead, Mass., which is another seaside village, although the market wasn't next to the ocean like in Hingham, which is...
No, it was in the parking lot of the high school, which was less exciting.
It was less exciting. But that was also a really nice market. And even though we'd only gone to that one for a few years, they'd already gotten to... We started to get to know people there.
Right.
As well. We still miss some of the folks that we...
Like the goat cheese lady. She had the best cheese.
Oh, man, that was the best. And there was the lady who sold the other cheeses who was always right next to her. Sold the cow's milk cheeses.
Yeah.
Those were good. Yeah. Yeah. So, sorry, I went into... the Vietnamese farmers. They would sell Asian vegetables.
Right. Stuff you couldn't find at the local supermarkets or... Even any other Whole farmers Foods. Markets. Yeah.
So
good stuff.
I think some of that, I remember looking up some of them and finding out that they're not actually supposed to sell them here. They're like an invasive species, but I'm not going to tell on them. I mean, it's been 10 years, so who knows? They've gone legit since then. But some of our favorite vendors, we always go to one of the farmers we go to is Second Nature Farm. Although the couple that owned that farm sold it over the winter.
And they moved to Oregon?
Yeah, Oregon. Yep. And they were really nice. We met them again. The farmer, they were young. They were in their 20s, I think, when we first met them.
They weren't even married when...
They weren't married. Yeah. No, they got married during that time. In fact, we ran into the wife at the Museum of Fine Arts because she worked there before they were married. And she remembered us from the market. I remember that. And then they got married, then they had a baby, and then they moved to Oregon and sold it to another guy who seems like a nice guy so far, but we don't know him yet. So, and it's a new crew. That's different people.
Yeah, all new people.
Yeah, it's always kind of... That's one of the things about a market is it changes every year. There's different vendors. Vendors come and go. Like, another one we really miss right now is... Again, it's cheese. We miss cheese. That's the lady from Narragansett Creamery, which sold amazing cheeses.
Oh, yeah. Really good cheeses. Mm.
But we have our favorites, Pan d'Avignon, which is a
French bakery.
French bakery from Hyannis, Massachusetts, on the Cape. They drive all the way from the Cape every Saturday, and they have the most amazing breads.
Croissants, baguette.
Loaves of...
And then
whole wheat multigrain bread that the kids love.
And Anthony's favorite is the multigrain light sandwich bread. And he always says the full thing, multigrain light sandwich bread.
When he's requesting it, when he's saying he's making a sandwich of it, he doesn't never abbreviates the name. It is really good bread. they stopped making bagels, which I liked their bagels, but until there was a problem for a while where they didn't know how to cut the bagels. They would like slice it at an angle, like through. It was horrible. It's don't cut it if you're not going to cut it right. You know. So and then the lady there who runs it, she's so nice, and it was an unexpected surprise. She had told us last year that she wasn't coming back, but evidently she changed her mind and she's back at the market. And then the fish guy who gives the kids
Tom always has lollipops for the kids.
Yeah.
As soon as he sees them, he lines them all up on the counter, and one of the kids goes and runs and grabs the lollipops.
Yeah. And so there's always our favorite vendors, the jam ladies from Summer's Bounty. There's two sisters that make jam. One year, Sophie could not eat breakfast without having the ginger peach marmalade. And it was like December and we ran out, and I got their email and I emailed them. I said, is there any way we could get, and they were like, oh, we're leaving vacation or something, or we're not gonna be home. So we're going to put it in a cooler on my porch. Here's my address. Come to the house, just throw a check in there and take the bag of the ginger peach marmalade.
Best jam ladies ever.
Well, this is the thing. This is like back in the day when you knew the green grocer down at the corner and the butcher and the baker and the candlestick maker. You knew the people who gave you your stuff. And it was, I mean, you kind of know the people at the Stop and Shop, the supermarket. You know, you see the same fish guy or the, you know, but it's not the same thing. They don't know you like that. And they work for a big corporation. They can't do extra things for you usually. So that's the thing I love about the market. Not to mention all the great stuff we get from there.
And not to mention the fact that the kids get to go play on the beach after the market's over.
Yes. So Isabella has started this new thing every week. It's kind of a new art project.
Yeah, she got a set of watercolors for Epiphany. And she sits down at the same spot on the beach every Saturday and does a quick watercolor sketch, maybe takes 15 minutes or so of the same scene. But it's a little bit different every week because the tide's high or the tide's low, the sun is out or the sun's, or it's mostly cloudy or there's fog. Last week she was very excited because there was fog.
Yeah, and so she paints it, the scene, the same scene, but every week, you know, just a little different. And it's such a neat art project for her to kind of pick up on her own. And like she's going to have this series by the end of the summer, this series of paintings, watercolors of the same place, and to show how it changes over time. I thought that was really neat. I'm really glad that, well, they're all following in your footsteps of art, because you've started some art projects of your own.
Right. My current project is the index card a day, which I'm not actually doing one a day, but I found online a website that does prompts for the months of July and August. They give you a daily prompt and you do a picture of any kind, any media that you want to, but it has to be on an index card. And I've done a few of those so far, and it's been fun.
And you, I have to say, your art, your drawing, your painting has really progressed. I mean, it really seen some improvement. Now, I mean, there's some family, art. There's art in your family. Your brother is an artist. He's a professional artist.
Right. He's done professional commissions from.
Well, he did a mural for Merle Haggard's a music video for Merle Haggard.
Right.
All in Austin, obviously. He did.
He's done.
But he did a mural for Facebook in their headquarters in Austin.
Right. And he did a mural on a local art supply store on the side of the building. And he's done commissions for, you know, portraits and work for private commissions. But he is a graphic designer by day and a fine artist by night.
And we've got some of his art here in the house. Some wonderful pieces. So you and Isabella and the other kids are all artistic. They all like to draw and
yes, the highlight of today was getting new sketchbooks in the mail because Ben had filled his sketchbook and was very despondent that he didn't have a new one to fill.
Right. So one of the nice things that also at the farmer's market, one of our traditions is there used to be a truck that was parked there. It was a food truck for coffee. And this guy who Red Eye Roasters, and he would sell coffee at the market. And he eventually got a location, which is just down the beach from it in a building that's been there for it's been like 5 or 6 years he's had this.
Right.
So we usually go there after the market and we get a cup of coffee and, you know, maybe a cookie for the kids or something like that. And because it's such good coffee, Red Eye Roasters is the best. And this time Bella was painting and we just started walking down the beach and we got about more than like halfway to Red Eye. I'm like, well, there's no sense walking back to the car to drive over to Red Eye. So why don't I just go over there and just get our coffee? And so the boys and I, we walked over and stood in line. This, as the barista says, why is it every time you come in, a huge line forms just in front of you? I'm like, I don't know. It's my luck.
Talent.
Yes, but it's worth the wait. That's why I told him it's worth the wait. And so, and by the time I got the coffee, you had shown up and to pick up your coffee for me anyway.
Yes.
And then afterward, we kind of walked down the...
We walked down the pier and looked at the boats and looked at the birds. And
the big war memorial. They have a huge war memorial there. They seated, you know, not a soldier. I don't think it's a soldier. Is it a soldier?
No, it's a guy in like a toga wearing, holding a torch on a, riding bareback on a horse.
Symbolic representation of some of soldiers or
victory.
Victory. Victory. Yeah. Well, let's say it's a victory. A very large, it's larger than life. The kids could walk under the horse's belly. Thankfully, no one commented on the anatomically correct horse. It was a stallion. Let's just put it that way. And so that was nice. That was a nice start to the weekend. And then we came home, and we needed some yard work done. Those bushes in the front of the house have been growing out of control. And even though Isabella pleaded with me not to cut the bushes because the birds alight in them and she loves to watch them in the bushes.
The hollies were eating the azaleas.
Yes. I left one of the bushes that she asked me particularly not to cut. And I cut the holly bush. I mean, there were trees growing up through. It had been a long time since anything had been trimmed out there. And there were literally maple trees growing up through these bushes. I had to pull those out. I mean, they still could be trimmed back even more than they are. Let's be honest. I did some minor trimming. So we did that. And as I was doing it, Ben saw what I was doing, and I didn't ask him to come and help me, but he jumped in, he went and got the wagon, he started picking up the branches, and the other kids saw it, and they started helping too, and they started carting it off to dump it in a pile inside of the house. And then when we were done with that, we're like, well, what else should we clean? And so we went to the backyard, and there's a corner of our backyard that it's shady, and these vines, I don't know where these vines came from, somebody planted vines, and I want to strangle them with the vines at some point. Because these vines take over. It's a creeping vine. I mean, it creeps through the grass. It climbs up all the trees. It chokes everything. We have wooden fences on every side. Because our neighbors are very close to us. We're in a development, a subdivision. So that every house is, you know, yard is right on top of every other house. And it had climbed up and through the slats of the fence. And so we started pulling out. And I got tired. Let me be honest. I got tired of it for a while, and I would go, you know, rest, and the kids would keep going, and they just loved ripping those vines out and tearing them up, and we started pulling, there was an old tree trunk we pulled down, and we did it Saturday afternoon, then we went back to it Sunday, and I mean, that corner is now really clean. There is a giant pile of torn up vines on the side of the house that we need to figure out what to do with. I'm waiting for it all to die and compact a bit, and then I'll bundle it up somehow or whatever, but we'll figure that part out. Unfortunately, there was a complication in those vines. It wasn't all just creeping ivy.
There was some poison ivy in it too.
So was it Ben was the first to succumb, wasn't he?
Well, he'd already had poison ivy from just playing in the yard.
Yeah, that's right.
So he had it for a couple of weeks.
And so he was still probably pretty sensitive to it. And so by, what was it, Tuesday that he started? I think Tuesday you had to take him to the doctor.
Right. I think he had a virus on top of the poison ivy because he was feeling really bad. But his eye was all swollen up when he woke up on Tuesday morning. And I looked at him and I said, okay, we're going to the doctor finally. I'd been putting it off because the poison ivy was bad, but not that bad.
And so you went in to the pediatrician. And so what did the pediatrician say? Like you felt like she didn't take you seriously. The PA, the physician's assistant.
She was fine. She said, yep, that looks like poison ivy. She had another rash that I think was probably a viral rash. And she just sort of said, yeah, that doesn't look like poison ivy. It's something else, but I'm not really worried about it.
Okay. So she gave you prednisone for him.
Yes.
Oral prednisone, which is good because we've been using hydrocortisone cream, prescription strength, but it really wasn't doing much.
It just takes a lot longer right. to dry it up.
And you really don't want to put it on the eye where he was getting swelling. So that was Tuesday. And then Wednesday, I started breaking out. Now, I mean, obviously, I was wearing, I have these long leather gloves that I use when I do yard work, mainly because of the big thorn bushes out there and to protect my arms on that. But I thought I was pretty well covered, except the gloves only go up to about just below the elbow. And that's where the problem begins. That's where I have the rash, red, swelling, pink, itchy. And it was driving me crazy. And then it was spreading. It was getting, I had some on my neck and then on my chest. And I think the legs was just torn up from the thorns and things. So they were itchy from that. But, and then Sophie started showing symptoms.
Sophie has it all over her arms, legs, neck, face.
So we went to urgent care. Where my doctor is, our doctor, Melanie, might have the same GP. And so we went to urgent care there. We saw a physician's assistant there. And this is the problem. This is when I go, I don't have all the information. Like she says, oh, well, you know, we could give you the oral or we could give you the topical and, you know, it's up to you. And but, you know, generally the topical is better, has fewer side effects. And so I'm like, OK, give me the topical. And we come home and Melanie says,
could have sworn that I said she really needs some oral prednisone because it's all over her face and right near her eye and we can't put the cream on her face. And it's,
well, the PA said that it wasn't a problem. Like she says, she puts it on her 6-month-old and it's fine. That's the thing is, I'm like, you're the professional. I'm just believing you.
Yeah. The ladies at the pharmacy were with me. They were shocked that she didn't prescribe an oral steroid.
Right. So I had to call back and say, look, you know, I've changed my mind. I want the oral. Could you give me the prednisone pill instead of because I'd already picked up the cream, which, you know, we just will have that. And actually, I put the cream on in addition to the taking the pill because it gives me some relief from the itching. But I had to call back and it was embarrassing. You know, I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm being a difficult patient. And then Melanie, because I know I'm having to work and, you know, get back to work. And Melanie goes up to the pharmacy and they only have one prescription. They have one for me, not one for Melanie. So I have to call again. Oh, you only said you wanted, you know, you didn't say that you wanted both prescriptions switched. I'm very sorry. This is the thing is, it's very important to me that I never come across as the difficult customer or patient or whatever on the phone. I'm very sorry. I should have been clearer that this is my fault. Would it be okay if I could trouble you to just, you know, switch to hers as well? Oh, no problem. No, that'll be fine. It's just very important to me. I know that I'm going to get much further than if I'm rude or angry with them, even if I feel.
So I ended up making 2 trips to the pharmacy in between taking Anthony to the cardiologist and dropping Bella off and picking Bella up at the camp that she's doing.
Yes, which we'll talk about maybe next time. We'll talk about Bella's camp. It's really cool. And speaking of Anthony, the cardiologist, we should probably say, I mean, it's a precautionary. They think there might have been a murmur or something like that.
Yeah, he's getting extra beats occasionally, and they just want to double check to make sure that right. Nothing's wrong. He's not having
There's no major
heart problems.
Yeah, no major heart problems. Just he had a bout with Lyme a couple years ago, and that's that means everything is elevated risk, etc. So now we're taking prednisone, dealing with roid rage. Poor Ben had a bad day.
Prednisone makes me really cranky and angry and wanting to scream at everybody. And when you're 9, it's even harder.
Oh, when Sophie gets it, it's going to be bad. Sophie is sunshine and thunderstorms and very little in between. And there's a possibility that we're going to have a storm.
There's a reason why Kylo Ren is Sophie's favorite Star Wars character.
Yes, the masked Kylo Ren, not the Rey's boyfriend Kylo Ren, but the original masked scary Kylo Ren. So that's what we've been doing. That's what we've been up to. So let's talk about what we've been watching on TV, because neither of us have been to the movies lately. So, Melanie, what have you been watching?
Well, last night I ended up watching Brideshead Revisited on YouTube. A friend of mine has suggested a summer book club, and a bunch of us are getting together on Facebook to read Brideshead Revisited. And discussion started about the recent movie, which everyone agrees was terrible, and the previous BBC adaptation miniseries, which everyone says is really good, and I hadn't seen it, so I decided to watch that. And
fun. So you're not cheating in your book club by watching it.
Oh no! I've read the novel several times. This is sort of a reread. Mm. I'm in it mostly for the discussion.
Yes. Well, I've been a lot of my TV and movie watching revolves around stuff I have to watch for my various podcasts. I did rewatch Captain Marvel. You haven't watched that yet?
No, I haven't seen it.
So we have it on iTunes now, so you can watch it. But I enjoyed it, maybe even a little more the second time. And this isn't just a plug, but after hearing the discussion of the podcast, I wasn't in on the podcast, but the panel that discussed it, I really got something more out of it after hearing what they had to say and getting some insight on it like that. So that was really cool. That was in there. You can check it at sqpn.com. I'm really not doing that to plug it. I'm just saying it was a good discussion. Something else I've recently watched last night. I watched the first episode of a History Channel documentary series called Unidentified. And it's it's following this guy who used to lead this secret government UFO investigation program called ATIP. Again, this is podcast related because I do a podcast with Jimmy Akin called Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. And we recently talked about this ATIP program before this new show was out. So we're watching this and we'll talk about it again on a future podcast. But it goes much more in depth than we could go in just our one episode. And it's pretty remarkable. We were talking about this earlier tonight with the kids before dinner. And I have to say the whole UFO thing, I mean, these are not cranks. This guy has 20 some odd years as a counterintelligence agent with the Department of Defense. The former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Intelligence is with this guy. They all used to work inside, and then when they left, they've all agreed that the government isn't doing enough to tell the citizens, the Americans, what's going on. And so they're trying to get more information out. There's a guy who's a former scientist and engineer at Lockheed Martin Skunk Works, which makes all of the secretest of all American spy planes, and so on and so forth. And there's all this documentation, and it's pretty remarkable. Again, these are not cranks. So I'm still trying to reserve judgment and be a little skeptical, but it's hard to do that. So I'm watching that.
The truth is out there.
The truth is out there. By the way, I just noticed X-Files, all 9 seasons, is on Amazon Prime to watch. I may be watching some of that. That may be my next binge watch. Because I missed a lot of the early seasons of X-Files because I was living in Steubenville without cable. And there was no Fox over-the-air channel at the time. So I missed several seasons of that. So I may have to go back and rewatch. On Netflix, the new season of Black Mirror dropped. And I got to say, I'm feeling a little like they're, Black Mirror is hit or miss. Sometimes I just feel like they go too far. The whole premise is they take what we know of technology and kind of extend it out a little bit to, you know, to what we could do with technology in a few years, say in 10 years of where technology is going, and sort of speculate and then look at the dark side of that. So, right. So one of the things I did was like last season was a episode on what if all of our social interactions, all of our ability to get around the world was based on a social score, a constantly changing social score. So, you know, when you have interactions with people. So like right now, if you take an Uber, you give a rating to the driver and the driver rates you, and your ability to get future Uber rides or to be an Uber driver depends on getting good ratings. So what if you extended that to everything in every interaction? The ability to buy a house, the ability to get a job, everything was dependent on that. And it was a pretty bleak dystopian. That
sounds really depressing.
Yeah. So that was one last season. So last night was one. And I had to say, without getting too much into the details, it was a look at how virtual pornography, virtual reality version of that, would be so harmful to marriages, to relationships. And yet their final conclusion was, look, we found a modern adult way to deal with it, and ignored all of the actual harm that it did. Like they were actually going in a good direction of showing how harmful it would be. And then they went beyond, and they were like, well, it's okay. It just, it was so frustrating. Like, it was kind of a little creepy, but you know, because of course it's Netflix, so they can show more than, they don't show all that much, but it was still kind of creepy, but it was just so kind of frustrating. I'm like, do I really want to keep watching this if it's going to be this frustrating every episode? There was a couple episodes last season I didn't even finish watching because one was like a scary horror movie thing, and I'm like, I don't do scary horror movies. So that's what I've been watching this past week, in addition to my usual Star Trek and Doctor Who and that sort of stuff that I do for my podcasts. So Melanie, what are you reading lately?
Well, I just finished reading the Young Wizards series by Diane Duane, which Leah Labresco had recommended to me several years ago, or a couple years ago. And it's a really cool series. It's about two young wizards, and then the series gains characters as it goes on, but two young wizards named Nita and Kit, who each find a book titled So You Want to Be a Wizard. And it turns out it's an actual wizard manual that teaches them magic.
Does it involve going to a castle in Scotland?
No. No.
This predates Harry Potter, by the way, by a substantial number of years,
yeah,
right?
I think the first book came out in the late 80s.
So more than 10 years.
Right. And I really think that it blows Harry Potter out of the water. The magic is very systematic. It's very internally consistent. And what drives me crazy about Harry Potter is that it just does not feel like there's actual rules that the magic follows. And then I think that the Young Wizards has a profoundly moral core to it. Before they can become wizards, before they can take the first step in learning magic, they have to take the wizard's oath. And the wizard's oath basically says, I vow to protect life and to fight against entropy. And it includes clauses about respecting the respect, not doing anything to any creature or being against its will. And basically they fight, they use their wizarding powers to promote life, to fight for life, to fight against death and entropy. And there's a personification of death, which they call the Lone Power, who comes across as pretty satanic. And the life has a personification who they call the One. And as time goes on in the series, it becomes much more clear that the One is could possibly be another name for what we call God. The series sort of allows the reader and the participants to find their own name for what they serve. But it's very, very much a, your powers have to be used for the, for good, or they will be taken away from you.
And this series, like you said, started in the late 80s, but the most, there's a number of books, and the most recent one was only a few years ago, right?
The most recent book was published in 2016.
So she's been doing this for a long time.
Right. And they added, the series has added characters and had all sorts of adventures. They go out into space and they meet wizards from other galaxies and other planets. And there's lots of fun Star Wars references and Doctor Who references and...
Very nice. Very nice. And there are whales that are wizards?
Oh, yes. In the second book, or the third book, I think, they go underwater and they participate in a whale wizardry ritual, which is almost a passion play. It's really fascinating. They reenact the whale's choice. And you find out as the series goes on that every intelligent life form, every intelligent species has their own version of the choice that they have to make, the choice between good or evil. And some representative of the lone power, the evil one, comes and offers them a very, very tempting choice. And then they have to decide whether to accept it or reject it. And it turns out that some species accept it and some reject it. And then they have to deal with the consequences of that. And that's what wizards essentially do. And it reminds me very much of C.S. Lewis's space trilogy, but updated and with science, which is much more believable, because where the space trilogy, Lewis was dealing with the sciences as he knew it, but it was out of date. And Diane Duane's wizards, the science is really there. If they are going to go to the moon, they need to make sure to include in their spells enough oxygen and heat, and they need to account for the rules of physics. And every spell takes power, takes energy, and going up to the moon will leave you feel like you just ran a marathon.
Right.
So it's very satisfying in that way. The kids love it because, wow, magic actually costs you something. You can't just, oh, well, I'll just...
Lumos. Accio. Yeah.
I'll just wave my magic wand and then I won't have to do the work. Because it turns out that, in fact, if you say a spell, it costs you just as much energy as if you'd got up and done it yourself in the first place. So magic is really only used when there is no other choice.
Interesting. I remember Diane Duane. I've read some of her stuff from the early 80s. She wrote some Star Trek novels, some of the best Star Trek novels back then. And so that's where I knew her from. I didn't know about this Young Wizards books. And the nice thing with these books is that Anthony and Sophia and Isabella are all reading them and talking about it together.
Right. They've got their own little book club, which now I'm a part of. Now, I will say that if I had pre-read the series, I might have a few reservations because they are technically young adult books. And after about the third book, there starts to be talk about boyfriends and an occasional mention of sexual matters. Nothing explicit. Nobody actually has sex, but like, Nita's mom is kind of worried about how much time she's spending with her fellow wizard Kit. And Nita hastens to reassure her, "Mom, we're not having sex." I'm not entirely comfortable with
preteens reading that. Yeah.
Preteens reading about that. And it becomes clear in the later books when they decide that they are going to be boyfriend and girlfriend, that these are things that they haven't actually done anything about, but they're thinking about and talking about and wondering about. And it's a little bit more explicit than I might have been comfortable with if I'd finished reading the whole series before I introduced them to the first book.
Anthony's 8. You know, right. He's...
But the first two books, I think, are fine for, yeah, for kids of any age.
I mean, for Bella, 13, it's probably okay.
She kind of skims the boyfriend stuff.
She's still not comfortable with all that stuff yet. But it, like, for a 13 or 14 or 15 year old, I mean, certainly by 14 or 15, they're probably mature enough to deal with it. It's not, it's at their level.
And it's nothing that kids who
watch TV
or go to public school wouldn't have encountered, but our kids are a little bit more sheltered being homeschooled.
Yeah. We're not hiding things from them, but we're certainly not exposing them to anything that they don't need to know about yet as much as we can. All right. So while you've been reading that, and of course, and you were saying you haven't made much progress in your half a dozen other books.
Yeah, I'm kind of stalled out on some of the other books, although I have been enjoying some audiobooks, especially because I'm spending more time in the car. And I'm just finished listening to The Odyssey and Beowulf, and I'm starting The Iliad, which Anthony listened to a little bit of on Thursday. And surprisingly enough, all of the kids have really come to like Moby Dick.
Yes.
We've listened to the first, I think, 8 or 10 chapters, and they like Queequeg and they want to know what's going to happen next. And we haven't even got onto the whaling ship yet. We're still in Nantucket.
And it's probably because it's an audiobook. We found that there are some things that just need to be heard as opposed to, I mean, so many of us had to slog through Moby Dick in high school as part of a class or somebody, some people in college.
I confess, I was one of the nerds who actually kind of liked Moby Dick in college.
Well, there's a lot of, yeah, explains a lot. But like Shakespeare, it's best, for some of the stuff, especially the older stuff, it's best being heard first and then read.
Right. And this version of Moby Dick I found is actually free online. It's a podcast. And it's an interesting mix where every chapter is read by a different reader. And some of them are famous actors. And then some of them are just ordinary Joes. And the quality is a little bit uneven. Some of the actors have better sound equipment than others. But it's fun. It's engaging. And I hadn't remembered how funny Melville is. I really, really, really funny.
Mm.
So far, so good. We'll see if we make it through the entire novel because it's really long.
And this was inspired by a recent visit to Mystic Seaport in Connecticut, where they had a video of a film of actual whaling activities at the turn of the century, the 20th century, set to Melville's description of it.
Right. So they had this silent film of whalemen killing and then processing a whale, and they used for the narration of this movie, they just used text from Moby Dick.
Yeah, and it was really good.
And I said, wow, I remember liking Moby Dick when I was in college, but that was 20 years ago. And listening to it read dramatically with the video of the whalers, I said, I really want to reread Moby Dick.
Mm.
But to be honest, if I have to pick up the book, I'm never going to actually read it. So an audiobook was really the right call.
We've been doing a lot of audiobook in the car, especially. It actually makes for a more pleasant car ride sometimes. There's less sniping when everyone wants to hear the story.
We have a bunch of different audiobooks. There's the audiobooks that I listen to when I've only got one or two kids in the car, like The Iliad or Beowulf. They might, in an individual child, might hear a few chapters here, a few chapters there. They're not hearing the whole book. Then I have one book that we're listening to when all five kids are in the car with me. And that's The Four-Story Mistake by Elizabeth Enright. And then we have The Swallows and Amazons books, which we're only listening to when all seven of us are in the car, because I've read them, all the books, to the kids, but Daddy didn't get to hear them. And they really, really wanted to share this best beloved series with Dom.
And I'll tell you, I love it. They're really great. I wish I'd read them when I was a kid. These are such great stories. The Swallows and Amazon stories are so pure. You know, they're not childish, but they're pure. They don't have any of the cynicism, any of the adult themes, any of the junk that so populates so much of stuff that's written for teens these days and young adults literature. It's just the kids having an adventure in a normal, I mean, well, the one where the Peter Duck one is not a normal kid adventure. They go sailing off to the Caribbean, but like the previous books were set on a summer vacation on a lake where they would camp and have boats. And it just, it's so good. It is so good.
And even within the series, Peter Duck is supposed to be the story that the kids write about their imagined adventures.
Which is probably where our kids are getting their Pirates and Penguins inspiration partially. From
at least
from
in part.
In part, anyway. So, yeah, and that's the thing is we look for excuses to go on long car rides. We listen to it on, you know, usually on the way to the farmer's market or something like that. But sometimes it's a long time between. When we did our great epic journey, 2-week, you know, travel across America last fall, we listened to The Lord of the Rings. And then when we finished that, was it Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit?
No, it was The Hobbit.
The Hobbit. When we finished that, then we listened to the first couple books of the Swallows and Amazon series. And yeah, it was a lot of fun to do that on those long days of driving 7 or 8 hours.
It makes the miles pass. Like, you can't believe that you've been listening to a book for 6 hours.
Well, I learned this back when I was going to Steubenville. It was an 11-hour drive from here to there. And I would listen to either books on tape, unabridged. Was it, the guy who wrote The Lord, John Grisham, mm-hmm. had like The Firm unabridged or something, you know, but I also listened to Scott Hahn tapes. I would listen to his, you know, Answering Common Objections or Salvation History. And those would be 8, 10, 12 hours worth of audio. And really, you would go through those and you'd be like, I'm in Western Pennsylvania already.
I would do the same, except my going back and forth from college was only between Dallas and Austin. But I listened to quite a few audiobooks.
I remember when we went down, when I came down for one of the Christmases, it was me, you, and Teresa driving up to Dallas.
My sister.
Yeah, Teresa, Melanie's sister. And we listened to Ender's Game.
Right.
On an audiobook. Yeah, that was really good. That was the when we had dinner with Rod Bear that time. That was a nice opportunity. So yeah, that's, audiobooks are great. I love them. When I get the chance to listen to them. Because a lot of time I'm listening to podcasts. That's what I do. So what am I reading? Well, first I want to recommend, if you are on Goodreads, go ahead and follow me on Goodreads, friend me, or, you know, follow me. I put all my stuff there. I'm in the Goodreads challenge, although I am like 6 books behind in my Goodreads challenge this year.
Oh, that's really sad.
Well, because the books I'm reading are just so dense. Like, I set myself back by reading Brandon Sanderson's first novel of the Stormlight Archive series, which was really good, but really long. It took me like a month and a half to read it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if I was doing a challenge, which I'm not, I spent the first few months of this year reading 2 books.
Yeah.
The Brothers Karamazov and Can You Forgive Her by Anthony Trollope.
I'm going to like read a bunch of comic books after this just to catch up.
Read the Young Wizards. It took me about a week to read all 11 books.
I know. It's tempting. But you should see my list of to be read. It is really long. I don't like, this is a to be read sometime, maybe after I die and I'm in heaven, I'll get to read these because it's just so long. But what have I just finished a book, S.M. Sterling's Theater of Spies. It's the second book in a trilogy that takes place in an alternate version of around the First World War era. Teddy Roosevelt. So what was it? Who's the president
Woodrow Wilson?
No, before that, Taft.
You've got me.
It was a president that Teddy Roosevelt was running against and lost to for his second try at the presidency. And in this reality, that president died of a heart attack. And so Teddy Roosevelt gallops to victory. They can't, the other parties can't get a candidate together in time. And so he gallops to victory and he takes control. And
so this is a second term?
Yes, a second term and not consecutive. This is he's back, and he implements these massive progressive policies, these reforms, you know, the advocates, the strenuous life. And at first you look at like, this is, wow, these are all very conservative and traditional values that he's, and this would be so much better for America. And he said, although, you know, there's, they, that seems a bit heavy-handed and a little bit oppressive, and not that seems like there's a single party rule kind of, and so there's a sort of tinge of concern at how things are going. There's an invasion of Mexico, you know, the whole Mexican War. There's an invasion of Mexico, and we turn it into a protectorate.
And okay, that's a different twist.
Yes, World War One starts with Teddy Roosevelt instead of Woodrow Wilson running things, which makes it a whole different ball of wax. And so, but the main character, the viewpoint character, is this spy for it's a division of the Secret Service. And remember, the CIA, the OSS doesn't exist until the 40s, until World War II. We really didn't have a Secret Service or spy agency per se, but they form one now. It's called the Black Chamber. And so we have this spy for the Black Chamber. Her name is Luz O'Malley. She's half Cuban. I think her mother was Cuban and her father was Irish. And so she's like this amazing spy, and they have to thwart the Germans. Nobody likes the Nazis here. Nobody likes fascists. These are the Kaiser's Germany.
Right. World War I.
Right. And where it's very interesting because you still have Germans, but they're also the high ranking officers are also Jewish. So, you know, they're kind of looked down upon by some of the Germans. There's still that in the culture. But it's an interesting little bit of twist. One of the things that Sterling does that's really good is that he thinks through everything. When he creates a world or creates an alternate reality, he thinks out all the consequences to their natural and logical end. Now, you might not agree with his decisions. I mean, he has to make some choices, but he thinks it through. And it's very interesting to see where all this goes. However, a couple of things about this series. Sterling has gotten into this tendency of really long exposition about the details of the world. Long exposition about the food or the clothing or the industrial capacity of the Siemens plant in Berlin at the time.
Like he got a little bit too in love with his research and didn't want to cut any of it?
Yes. There was a little of that. The other thing that kind of gets me is that there's this whole relationship between the main character, I don't know how you pronounce it, it's L-U-Z, Luz?
Luz, I think.
And this young Irish Boston woman that she meets, and they fall in love, and now they're in a relationship. And it kind of was kind of annoying. I'm not sure I can recommend it, but it was, there's aspects of it I really did enjoy. And I really do enjoy world building, really good world building, and that's what he's best at. So take it for what it will. Now I'm reading an advanced review copy that I got of a book called Goodbye Paris by Mike Bond, and it's a spy thriller. And what's interesting about it is it's about an impending terrorist attack on Paris, where someone's going to attack the Eiffel Tower and then also possibly drop a tactical nuke, like a suitcase nuke, in the city. And this American ex-Special Forces guy has been recruited by a friend of his who works for the CIA to come and help find the terrorist, because he's the only man alive who knows what this terrorist actually looks like. You know, it's a trope, I know. One of the interesting things about it, though, is that the book starts with the premise that Notre Dame has been burned, much more than it is in reality, than in our reality, but it was also burned by terrorists, but they're covering it up so that no one knows that it was by terrorists. It was done by workers during a renovation. I'm trying to figure out whether this was something they added like at the last second before they got these review copies out, or whether this was
uncanny coincidence.
That's really kind of interesting. I'm about halfway through the book. One of the things that kind of gets me, though, is that there are extended screeds about Islam and the Islamic presence in France, and there's a very definite viewpoint that the author is pushing on that. And while there are things I accept or make me think, some of it goes too far, and so I don't know if I'm going to be able to recommend it when I finish it. But that's what I'm reading now. I might go for something a little lighter next time. I also like to read like history. So I've been especially into American Revolution history lately. So anyway, yeah. So that's what we've been doing and reading. I think that's, I think it's about enough for this week. One of the things we're looking forward to in the future is talking some spiritual topics, maybe, hey, what's coming up in this Sunday's readings and or something like that. So if you've got anything, ideas along those lines, you want to hear from us, we'd love to do that. Before we close out, I've got some feedback that we've already gotten, which is very nice. On iTunes, Brian Flaherty has written us a review, and he says, I've been reading Dom and Melanie's blogs for years now, and hearing their voices is like seeing a radio personality in the flesh. As a fellow father of five with similar interests, Catholic faith, etc., I enjoyed this inaugural episode and look forward to many more. And then he says, Dom has a great radio voice, too. Well, thank you very much, Brian. I indeed have a great radio voice. Well, actually, I don't think so, but thank you for that. So thank you, Brian, for that review. And then Lindsay Sant, our friend from Australia, who is the host of Catholics of Oz podcast, he sent a note and said, I really enjoyed episode one. Looking forward to more. In a word, I describe this podcast as relatable.
That's really kind.
Yes. Relatable. I like to be relatable. That's nice. So if you can, like Brian and Lindsay, or especially like Brian did, he went onto iTunes and wrote a review and gave us a nice 5-star review. If you could do that, if you go to the Apple Podcast Directory or one of the other podcast directories and write a review there, that helps, especially with a new podcast. If there's a bunch of reviews that all come up at once, it you know, kind of alerts the computer to, hey, this people are interested in this, show this to more people, and it kind of helps us get the word out about the podcast. So we really appreciate that. And especially if you could share the podcast on your social media or to your friends, send them an email. Hey, this is a new podcast you might be interested in. Check it out. I'm enjoying it. That sort of thing. We'd really appreciate that. We want to grow the community of listeners around this podcast. So that's it from us. What did you think of our discussion? You can go to sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS, two T's. Thank you. Or the SQPN Facebook page, which is facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. You leave us feedback there or send an email to bets, BETTS, at sqpn.com. Although, if you write BETS, I've set it up so that we still get it, just because. And you can find relevant links for our discussion, like the links to the TV shows and the books, on our show notes at sqpn.com. So, until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.